Lessons from what Texas was about to go through at this time last year, that hurricane. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. A year ago today, a tropical depression in the Atlantic turned into a tropical storm, and weather forecasters named it Harvey. A week later, when it hit Texas and beyond, it had become a monster. Officials in vulnerable regions are trying to apply the lessons. Marketplace's Rima Crace reports.
When Hurricane Harvey made landfall in Texas last year, a lot of disaster plans got blown away.
We learned a lot when we got landlocked and got cut off from the supplies for the food bank.
Dan Mayer is with the Southeast Texas Food Bank. He says his organization now runs mock hurricane drills for its staff.
Definitely showed us we have to be ready to think outside the box.
There's a lot of rethinking that needs to be done, but officials are trying, says Sam Brody, an environmental science professor at Texas A&M University. Houston, for example, now requires new homes in the floodplains to be higher off the ground. And he says the city's doing a better job of communicating.
Houston is renting out billboards to advertise the importance of buying insurance, even if it's not required.
Officials need to keep updating the way they approach disasters, says Jeff Slegmilch with the National Center for Disaster Preparedness.
The challenge is that we don't actually reward elected officials based on their work and preparedness.
Instead, he says the focus is almost always on the response. I'm Rima Crace for Marketplace.
In a tweet this morning, President Trump embraced the idea of doing away with quarterly reports for companies. He's asking the SEC to look into twice-a-year reporting of profits and losses to save money and also presumably to encourage longer-term thinking by companies. Europe already does it this way. While U.S. regulators are worried about those nicotine delivery devices known as electronic cigarettes, some British authorities see an upside. A report today from the U.K. Parliament looks at benefits and costs of vaping and embraces some of the benefits. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, joins us from London. Hello.
Hi, David.
So it's a report from a parliamentary committee?
That's right. It's the Common Science and Technology Committee. And some of their evidence that went towards the creation of this report obviously came from health experts, and some of it came from the industry.
But ultimately, it finds there are positive effects in certain situations to smoking electronic cigarettes.
They're saying, look, people are still dying of regular cigarette-related illnesses. Given that with e-cigarettes, they're not burning tobacco and toxic smoke into your lungs. They're just heating some flavored nicotine and making this inhalable vapor. So it's still addictive, but overall, it is less toxic.
But what about the issue of e-cigarettes being a gateway that entices younger people to start smoking the real stuff?
Now, this is really interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, the tobacco industry as a whole has been moving from developed countries where the regulation has been so strong to poorer, younger countries to get more customers. And this report seems to kind of discount that argument. They're saying, well, yes, kids do try e-cigarettes, but it's not really significant enough to make an impact on their findings. And they still feel like there is some health benefit. There should be debate about whether or not e-cigarettes should be used in public and whether health providers should perhaps be suggesting it as an alternative to regular cigarettes.
Writing prescriptions for e-cigarettes.
That's right. And more debate on whether e-cigarettes should be allowed in public spaces, restaurants, even on public transport.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
In the U.S., there's a different view. The middle of next month, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration will launch a campaign aimed at keeping 10 million young people from vaping.
I'm Shepard from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I listen to Marketplace several times, actually, every day, because it's got the economic news and developments that are important to me. I donate to Marketplace so that it can be available to everyone, and I hope you'll join me in this effort. Thanks.
To join Shepard as a Marketplace investor, donate online at marketplace.org.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
On Monday, Greece formally leaves the program of low-interest loans, often called the bailout. The cheap loans came with tough conditions that contributed to terrible hardship. They did stave off total economic collapse, but unemployment remains at a high 20%. When the U.S. hits the economic skids, its central bank frees up dollars by printing money like crazy, but that was not an option for Greece since it uses the European single currency. But as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from Athens, many Greeks still love their euro.
In his city center flower shop, Spiros Kontogiannis fumes over the euro. By adopting it, he says, Greece has fallen under foreign control.
As a Greek citizen, I feel ashamed because the politicians now take the instructions from abroad.
Euro membership allowed Greece to borrow heavily at low interest rates. Then, when the country hit the skids, it couldn't devalue its own currency to get out of trouble. Its eurozone partners took over and imposed austerity.
I think euro made Greece very, very poor, and it made us like a colony, something like slaves.
But most Greeks still support euro membership. They recall the high inflation and economic turmoil under the old national currency, the drachma. Factory manager Christos Mavrou.
With euro we have a stability and we have a safety net. So I need euro.
Given Greece's turbulent history, four centuries of Turkish rule, a civil war, a military dictatorship, it's hardly surprising that the country yearns for a safe haven.
We love European Union. We are very thrilled to be EU members.
That's cafe owner Alekos Sandros, who doesn't feel tempted to follow the British example.
You don't think Grexit would be a good idea after Brexit?
We feel disgust of the British. They should remain and fight for a better Europe, not to run. They are cowards.
Hardline Brexiters say the Greeks have been humiliated by the EU and should bail out now. But Greek writer Yanis Sarakatsanis says that would entail an even bigger humiliation.
Leaving the euro is like being relegated. You go to the second league. You failed. You went with the big boys and you failed.
Although he concedes that Greece's euro membership doesn't look like a rip-roaring success. In Athens, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And the Turkish lira is falling again today after a three-day pause. This after the U.S. threatened new sanctions amid that dispute over the U.S. pastor under arrest in Turkey. The lira is down 5% at the moment, 6.1 to the dollar. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.